What's going on? Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, setting the scene each and every week to help you guys find out what's happening in TV, movies, music, sports, the arts, and everything in between. We're so proud to be syndicated on stations coast to coast and originating right here in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia's number one talk radio station, Talk 860 WWDB. And you can get insider access and go behind the scene on our show's official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And I want to say a big howdy ho to my great producer, Matt Mynarek. Hi, Matt.
Oh, howdy ho.
Howdy
to you too.
Ho. I don't know where that just came from, but you know.
All right. Just roll with it. Let's go.
I'm in a good mood today because it's another good show. We got another great show coming today.
Like always?
Yes. You know the safety dance, right?
Yes.
You can dance if you want to.
Yep.
Yes.
I know that song,
I never
of course.
Got the lyrics right ever. That was one of the ones I always thought was something else. Everybody look at your hands. I always thought it was everybody get in your pants. I don't know. I heard a lot of different things for that.
I see where your mind was at.
Always where it is, but you know, so it's nice that we're going to have actually the person responsible for that little amazing ditty that has survived over 40 years, the Ivan Dorschuk of Men Without Hats.
Oh, that's going to be interesting.
Yes.
I like hearing backstories of former artists and stuff.
Yes, and how did that come to be? It's actually a very, very interesting story. So I can't wait to dig in. And then we're going to do a special encore presentation of one of our really good guests, psychic Teresa Caputo. The Long Island medium herself. And she's going to, you know, talk a little bit about her craft and what actually scares her, what goes bump in the night.
I remember that. That's a very interesting interview.
Yes. And she's fun. She's somebody you have to actually see. So this is radio, so it's more interesting even. You got to use your theater of the mind and kind of, you know, because she's very distinctive with that hair.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's some hair.
I remember when you were setting it up and right when she brought the Zoom on, she was still in the middle. She had her people around her.
It was like a pit crew, like NASCAR. I mean, they were like zoom, zoom, and putting her up on the, you know, the lift to change her tires.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
But, you know, we always talk about stuff. And in the shows, we talk a lot about AI. You know, we're always asking, especially musicians, what is it for you to have your copyrights and your this and your identity?
Not Allen Iverson.
Not that one. No. The other.
Maybe one day.
Yes. Maybe he'll be regenerated as AI. Oh, yeah. We can get him on. Yeah, that's true. He's not doing much now, is he?
He's a busy man.
He's probably doing something. I don't see him. Is he doing any sports cat? Like, does he do any like news now?
He's always at Sixers games and he's in commercials a lot.
Oh, well, there you go.
So, yeah, he's. I mean, somebody as popular as him, I think, always stays busy.
I think so, too. I really do. Once you have a name, you're kind of solidified to be given speeches, at least, or commencement addresses or something.
Yep, exactly.
Yep. So, and those pay, man. So those guys, that pays well.
Absolutely.
I know. But AI, it's scary for a lot of people. But I guess a few weeks ago, it went viral that AI is not doing so well with Google right now. So have you ever done it now? Have you gone on in the chat GPT, in the chat, whatever they are, and they answer your question like immediately because they pull all this data?
I've done it a couple times when it first started to get big, just out of curiosity.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I still have an app, I think, on my phone, but I don't think I've opened it up in a while. But
yeah.
I know a lot of people use it for certain things. A lot of people have gotten in trouble using it for certain things.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole nother ball of wax, like with school and, you know, plagiarizing. How do you catch people with that? But just even with my searches, I search all the time. I'm always asking questions, especially being in the job that I am. I'm always researching and asking questions to find out about guests and issues. And yeah, sometimes the answers come back interestingly. I don't think the technology is quite caught up yet to what they hope it would be.
Yeah, I could imagine it's not a finished product.
No, they rolled it out, I think, a little early because some of the funny ones, I do want to talk because I didn't know about this. I guess it went viral a few weeks ago, but I guess I was living under a rock and I just didn't hear any of this. But like certain questions, if you ask, one of the more interesting ones is, how do you keep the cheese from falling off your pizza? And someone, you know, asked that on Google, and it came back that they wanted to using glue. Yes, using glue to keep cheese on pizza. That was their answer that came back with the chat bot thing that told you yes, because apparently somewhere there was a funny answer somewhere along, because it all just pulls things off the internet really fast. It doesn't really decipher whether it was humorous, real, fake. It just doesn't matter. So, yes, it was telling people to eat to put glue on pizza to keep the cheese from falling off.
Well, that would definitely keep it from falling off. It probably wouldn't.
I don't know if those would adhere too well.
There are. I have watched a video once where they let you know how certain commercials are made.
Yes.
And how, like, you know, like milk on a commercial isn't really milk because they use something else. And I think in a way to get the stretchiness out of pizza cheese on a commercial, they do use some type of glue.
Oh, for like photo shoots, right?
Right.
They always say that the stuff you see in the presentation is not edible. Like that burger you could not eat, or that piece of pizza you could not eat.
Yeah, they'll put like motor oil on pancakes to look like syrup.
Yeah, it's thicker and it looks better on TV. Yes.
And I think they do use glue in a way to get the stretchy look out of cheese.
See, there you go. So that's maybe
where... So AI was confused.
It's very confused, because it's also confused that how many rocks a day should you eat?
Why? Well, who would ask that to begin with?
Apparently, someone asked.
Zero?
And, no, apparently you should eat at least one rock a day.
Rock
to be
what?
Healthy. A rock, granite, or a shale. I'm not sure exactly what kind
of
rock.
Go out in the
marble.
Parking lot here and just
exactly.
grab a rock and eat
one
it?
Rock a day.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I think the American dentists said, you know what? I think we're going to put that out there and a rock a day. You know, they're going to increase their...
Boost the business.
Boost the business. But yes, apparently a rock a day keeps the...
Probably a lot of minerals in there, but I mean, you could get minerals in a different way.
It doesn't, a rock a day does not keep the orthodontist away.
Absolutely not.
But that's another thing. And then I thought this one was the funniest one. Apparently, someone asked another question where I'm not really sure why, but they did. Do eating boogers boost the immune system?
Yes. Really?
Yes. And if you do, like anything, like try like health benefits of. When you're actually Googling something and you say, what are the health benefits of eating your own boogers? And this is what apparently came back, that it says that eating mucus may help prevent cavities, stomach ulcers, and infections, and may also boost the immune system, which is totally BS. But somebody must have said that somewhere along the line, and that came back as their top response to that question.
Wow. Never thought about that. I mean, you usually try to get rid of them. I didn't think about...
I was going to say Mucinex
on
these commercials.
On
I know. They could have a whole nother kind of line of product. But
it's pretty nasty.
Think about it, though. There are these people out there. You know, there were always in school. I always joke about this when people say, well, who are these people doing this? Or who are... And I say, remember in school when you had the paste eaters? Well, they vote now. And they're the ones that are reading these things. And they're the ones that might try glue on a pizza, or they might eat a rock, or they, you know, they just, people believe things. They always say it's on the internet, it must be true. So, you know, it's kind of scary, actually. I know it's funny, we're joking about it, but it's funny. What if somebody said, you know what, I read it, it must be true, I have to do this.
I bet you somebody did try
probably
glue on the pizza to hold the... there's no way that somebody that nobody tried that.
Somebody did. Well,
somebody
the fact
tried
that,
that.
You know, and maybe looking for a lawsuit too, because we're in the land of litigation. Maybe somebody said, you know what, I saw it, now I'm going to sue Google. But it's interesting because I researched more. I didn't use the chat AI for my research anymore. Yeah, but I researched a little more. And apparently, if you try to find a lot of this on Google now, it's not there anymore. All the viral posts and stuff, they're harder to find. And I'm like, Google, who would, you know, have the power to push things down far into the feed? And
so
you can't find much about it. It's still there. It's still lingering. But yeah, there were a lot. There were a lot. Like our first Muslim president ever was Barack Obama. Apparently, he's Muslim. According to AI, which is obviously proven not true.
Right.
Apparently, they were talking about who, I think it was Wisconsin University. What presidents? Apparently, almost all of our presidents graduated from that university. And some of them graduated after they were dead.
Wow.
That's
an accomplishment.
That's an accomplishment, too. So obviously, we're not.
They're the ones that slept in class all the time.
So obviously we're not at the stage yet where I think we should go full force into AI. I mean, at some point, I'm sure the potential is there to do things, but it's scary too to think, you know.
Yeah.
It's not there. They rolled it out way too soon, I think.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's some, because I can't imagine, I mean, that's just a ton of information that they have to try to get right.
Yes.
You know, because there's going to be people have written papers for it.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's been publications that people got in trouble for writing stories. And
well, look at The Onion. The thing you see on social media all the time where they're parodies of real news stories. And they're funny. It's a comedy thing. It's satire. But yet, they could pull from that as an authentic source, and it's completely BS. But
exactly.
It's a news source because it's on the internet. The computer isn't smart enough yet, which kind of makes me feel better that they're not that smart, but that, you know, that they are not deciphering what's real and what's fake.
Yeah, there's always going to be limitations with this.
Yeah.
No matter, even 10 years from now, there's always going to be something that AI can't figure out that the human mind can figure out.
Yes, yes.
There's
and
no way it's going to
be faster. It's going to compute faster than the human mind ever can. I mean, they're just more capable to do that stuff. But as for thought and reasoning and things like that, I'm not sure a computer can get to reasoning yet.
Right. And like perfect, the example you just gave, the onion.
The onion.
How will it know that maybe there'll be a code in there that they, in its program, that they say, okay, don't pull from this source. Or I don't know, but there's millions of different sites out there that they would have to through to let their AI technology know that, okay, when you're asking this question, don't go to this, or when you're asking this, don't go to this. And you know, that's going to take years to perfect, and I can't see it ever being perfected.
No. Have we not seen Terminator? That's all I ever say. When I think of AI, has anyone never seen that movie? I think everyone should watch that now in school as kind of almost like a history kind of lesson.
Somebody's
going to
think it's real.
It's very close to being real.
Yeah.
I mean, the closer we get to all of this, the more and more I see that's not that far-fetched now. I mean, back when it came out, what, in the 80s, everybody's like, oh, come on, ha, 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 this can't happen. And now we're looking at it, and how could, you know, computers can maybe think at some point
and take over.
Why not?
People develop robots for their own pleasure these days.
I can't even. That's a different conversation. Maybe we'll
do that
on a future show. We'll talk about that because, that's, again, a whole other ball of wax or polyurethane or something else.
Gadgets.
But I think the moral of the story today is let's still all kind of think for ourselves and do the research and not just assume that what we're being told is always right.
Absolutely.
Even on this show, if you don't like what you hear, research it. Find out if you like it. You know, I encourage people to do that.
Yeah, fact checked.
Yes, I agree. You know what? We don't have to do much, though, today about that, because I will tell you that we do have Ivan Doroschuk, who made the safety dance, who created that amazing hit, who it's been in Family Guy. It's been in, oh my gosh, South Park twice. You've seen it on Futurama. He likes cartoons, apparently. And it was on Beavis and Butthead. And you hear it all over the place. And so I think, you know, I kind of want to dig in and get into his story a little.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it. In 1982, new wave synth pop band Men Without Hats told the world you can dance if you want to with the mega hit, The Safety Dance. And over 40 years later, the world is still listening. Today on The Scene with Doreen, I am joined by the founding member, lead singer, and the writer of that smash song and many more, Ivan Doroschuk. Take a listen.
Around, practically forever singing. Oh,
Yeah, since their formation in 1978, Ivan Dorschuk has been at the forefront of popular electronic music, and he is still going strong. Still touring the globe 40-plus years later, Men Without Hats is reaching even more people and places than even the first time around. Their crossover sound and message is resonating with a new generation of fans, proving that good music will never die. Here on the scene with me today is none other than the leader of that message and sound, new wave legend Ivan Dorschuk. Welcome to the show, Ivan. What's going on?
Hey, we're just getting ready to go back on tour.
Oh, that is so exciting.
Busy summer up ahead.
That is so, I saw your schedule, my friend. Oh my goodness, you're everywhere.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fun.
Yes.
We're going to see a lot of people.
Now, how do you prepare for a tour? I mean, you've been doing this for, 40 plus years. What do you do? Do you have a certain meditation or mindset when you get amped up to go back on tour?
No, not really. I just take it easy, rest up, and the rest comes naturally.
Yes, I hear
a lot of fun.
I hear your Canadian accent too. I grew up in Buffalo, so I'm kind of your neighbor, Buffalo, New York. We're sort of a little bit. I have a little bit of the accent that I've worked, but you have a beautiful one.
Thank you.
people have classified you as new wave, pop synth even, but you really identify as punk or electronic punk.
Yeah, kind of. I grew up in the late 70s, well, musically in the late 70s. Grew up in the 70s. I was a sort of a glam rock child and then a disco nut. And kind of brought my love of synthesizers and dance music into the 80s. And it was all the punk new wave scene happening then. The DIY scene kind of gave us the impetus to get up and do it ourselves. So it was exciting times.
Yes, a lot of self-discovery, invention, new sounds, exactly the new wave, hence the term. But it's kind of interesting. You are set in the same a record store. You're right next to Depeche Mode and bands like that. And even you're sort of adjacent to Iggy Pop and people like that. So you're sort of you are you expand the genres.
Yeah, well, we had fun with it. That's what, punk new wave. We were all in the same bin back in the days, back in the back corner of the store, in the punk new wave bin. So we played at clubs a lot, and, starting off with a lot of punk bands, too. Or the only clubs that would have us were, few and far between. The rest were still playing rock and roll. And so we got to know each other really well, and it was fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. I want to go a little back further, though. You started out as a classically trained pianist with a mom that taught classical voice on the faculty of Montreal's McGill University. Did you ever study voice with your mom?
I did. She was my first voice teacher. And it was great. It was great studying with my mother. Then after that, I studied with my brother, Colin, who was also in the band, but he became a voice teacher as well. And he helped me put my voice back together for being on the road for long stretches of time. I had to sort of relearn how to sing. And my voice is actually, I mean, I think it's better now than it was. So it's good.
You're aging like a fine wine. I say that to a lot of people, but you really are. You're putting it all together and you're kind of coming into your own. Do you feel that now that you're sort of feeling that in the next stages of your life?
Oh yeah, it's a lot more relaxed now too. The starting off as a new band, I kind of likened it to being on a sports team where you travel around the country and you compete against other bands. You're competing for places to play and interviews. There's only so much room in the newspaper and there's only so many places on the top 40 charts. So it's a lot of competition goes on when you're a new band starting off. But now it's a big family of 80s folks and. We're all traveling. The work has been done and we're just people who are out there now are out there because they enjoy it and they're having fun. So we're a big, happy family now touring the globe. It's a lot more fun.
I love that. And a lot of people find it hard to find even 5 minutes of fame, much less 40 plus years of fame. So you all have that bond where you've survived in a very hard industry. Let's face it. The industry is not an easy one. So and you guys came out on top.
Well, yeah, we're blessed. The people are still listening to our music. I think one of the factors is that when you open up the radio now, you hear a lot of 80s influences in the music. There's the big drum sounds, the robot voices, the synthesizers. So kids are tuning into 80s music again, and it's gone full circle. And when we play shows, we have our original fans come out and see us, and they bring their kids and sometimes even their grandkids. So it's a family affair now. It's good.
I am a firm believer the 80s was the last decade that I really believe a good hook came out of it. I think songs were well written. I mean, I know that I'll probably get letters and people or emails now saying things, but I truly believe I'm an 80s like believer. I love the 80s. That's all I have on Sirius Radio. I love my 80s. I do. And I love you.
Great. Thank you.
You know, you're baritone. So you figured that out while studying classically, I guess, from your mom and your brother. Did you ever think of maybe going down the classical route, though, of singing or doing more of like the operatic roles or the art song roles?
No, my brother Colin did, though. He went to McGill also and studied voice and became a sort of an opera singer himself. So
that's great.
I figured one opera singer in the family was enough.
I come from that school. My degree, my master's degree is in opera. So I can understand how that could be kind of crazy to have more than one in one family. Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, we grew up with taking piano lessons. We had two pianos in the house. And a third brother who played violin. So
me too.
All practicing at the same time. It was quite a cacophony.
You know, I could see that happening. And did you guys compete for practice time? Because I know when I've read that you practiced a lot. You were playing a lot per day. So was it hard to find that time when your brother wasn't, or your other brother wasn't, or your mom wasn't practicing?
It was all going on at the same time. And my parents were really supportive. They actually, as long as I spent time at the piano, they kind of let me do what I wanted. And that's when I started to compose, started to write songs, you know, like in my late teens, just figuring out Beatles songs and figuring out the, you know, the top 40 songs on the radio and stuff like that. And as long as I spent time at the piano, my parents were happy. So that was, in that way, they were really supportive. They always have been supportive. So it was fun.
Yeah, that's a blessing. And I do want to say that even though your band is called Men Without Hats, you sure wear a lot of hats. You studied law in France. You moved back to Montreal, and you even studied film and communications. You do wear a lot of hats, Mr. Man Without Hat.
Yeah, well, that's in film and communications at McGill was where I met the first group of guys that we started the band with. On we just sitting there in the class, and like I say, it was the end of the 70s, and everybody was putting bands together, and I would listen to the Sex Pistols, figured if they could do it, so could I.
Yes, that's true. What did prompt you to go right in and take the full leap into music professionally?
I just slipped into it kind of naturally. I was, I think the first time I actually realized that that I wanted to do it as you know, for the rest of my life was opening up for XTC in Montreal. And I just gazed out on the audience and said, I could do this, you know, I could do this for a while. So it happened pretty naturally. I was in the band. I was going to university full time. I was working at the Montreal General Hospital pretty much full time also. So, it just everything. What first school sort of dropped by the wayside, then the job sort of dropped by the wayside, and I ended up with the band, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
Yes, and I'm glad that all happened the way that it did, because you know, I talk about this with a lot of my guests. If one thing in your life didn't happen, whatever that was, that pivotal moment, whatever it was, if it didn't happen, what would you be doing right now? And it's always kind of interesting to look back and say, well, what would I be doing if that one moment didn't happen?
Yeah, well, I would probably be into some kind of, I was also into graphic design. I was into drawing and stuff like that. So I'd probably be doing something in
the arts,
in commercial art or something like that, probably. Yeah.
Good, good. Now, I want to talk about, I noticed that often there's a dichotomy between your music and the message in your music, because you do write all the songs. One is friendly, and then the latter is a little more aggressive. And do you ever find that that's sort of like a juxtaposition of just your message and your music, that it's ever kind of been confusing in any terms to people or labels or fans?
No, I felt that that's kind of been the appeal of our music, is the just, you know, getting a sort of a serious message across, but doing it in a kind of a lighthearted manner.
Yeah.
And that's why I switched. We started off as a punk rock band and switched over to keyboards because I really felt that I wanted to reach more people. I wanted to be on the top 40. I wanted to be on the radio. I wanted people to hear me. And I realized early on that new wave, that synthesizer music had much a bigger chance than punk rock. So yeah, I switched over pretty early.
Yeah, pop music has always been a great delivery system of getting a deeper message to the masses.
And yeah, it's a great platform. It's one of the biggest platforms ever. So
And you know, when you went in, electronic music was still in its infancy when you were just emerging. How did the desire and the knowledge of the synthesizer come into your play in the music world?
Well, besides the piano lessons, I grew up like in the 70s. I was a big fan of progressive rock music, bands like Genesis and Pink Floyd and Yes, a lot of keyboard bands. And like I said before, I was also a big fan of disco. So I've always felt that new wave, that the type of music I was doing was electronic music. It was synthesizer music with a dance beat. And so it was really a blend of the two kinds of music that I really enjoyed. I kind of brought that into the 80s, and that's what I brought to the table.
Yes. And in the past, you said that you think that recording arts are a thing of the past. Do you still believe this? And has your opinion changed at all with the new development of AI and all the new capabilities that come along with that?
Yeah, well, it's still we're still in AI's infancy. We'll have to see. I think I hear a lot of like AI music, and I mean, it's all pretty cool and everything like that right now. But I think the creative process is still going to be a human thing.
Yes.
And the industry is cyclical. It's circular. It goes around. Like, we're in a singles market now. But when I started listening to music, that's what it was. It was a singles market. The Beatles put out singles, and then, you know, in a year. And then after putting out 12 singles in a year, they put it all together and put it on an album and then started making more singles. So things have kind of gone full circle. And like I said, I think the creative process is going to remain a human endeavor.
Yeah, it's evolving. And we never know really where it's going to go, but we can kind of predict based on patterns of the past. But, you know, because you were one of the first to embrace the technology of the 80s. And yet, you know, some of the technological advancements that are sort of hurting the industry now are probably the things that need to be removed to get the human aspect back.
Yeah, well, that's it. And that's one of the things that was exciting about the 80s was all the new technology, too. There was all the new, the gear that was happening. There was video was new, and the clothes were new. The hairstyles were new. Everything was new. So that's made the 80s an interesting time. And the video was also very instrumental in making the band as popular as it was.
Kids do not understand the huge impact that MTV had on making or breaking a musician back in the day. And you were a band that really did benefit from the MTV era, didn't you?
Definitely. There was back in the days where they only had about 10 videos on MTV and they played them in heavy rotation. And it was the beginning of a new era for me, because I went from pretty much total anonymity to being recognized in the street everywhere I went.
Yes.
So MTV changed my life for sure.
Yes, you became a sex symbol, from what I gather, from what I have gathered. Yeah. And, you know, maybe. You came out in that video, especially for the safety dance, and you didn't look like a lot of the people that were out there in that era. You really had the long hair. You were really kind of the antithesis of what everybody was seeing on MTV at that time.
Yeah, I think that's what you know, added to the longevity of the song and the band, is people were expecting spiked hair and zipper clothes and pointy shoes, and they got the Pied Piper or the Peter Pan instead. And that's what I think why I think the song has lasted so long too, because it's like watching a Western. You can't really date it. You watch the safety dance video, and it's like, I mean, you watch other 80s videos, you can sometimes chuckle and you know it's an 80s, you know what era it was made in. But the safety dance is kind of timeless. The video is timeless. It's kind of cool in that way.
Yes. And you were the only member of the band to be in the video.
I was. When we made the video, we were on tour, and they would just decided last minute, and it was quite a magical experience. I flew there and back on Concorde, and so the whole thing was a pretty magical event for me.
Oh, definitely. And what came out was magical. You know, I do want to say, before we go to break, many say that the more things change, the more they stay the same. And you were very big with being anti-establishment in your music. Do you think the message is even more relevant today in your music than it was even back then?
Well, I think, you know, it's people seem to need to hear that message still. They still need to hear that they can dance if they want to. And even with Pop Goes the World, the message that I was promoting back then was that we have to sort of take care of Mother Earth or she's going to blow up. And that seems to be what people are concerned about today as well. So I was lucky to be able to tap into timeless messages as well.
Does it ever sadden you that 40 years later, we're still worried about the same things, that we haven't had much advancement in those areas?
Well, I guess time is relative, and 40 years can seem like a long time, but it's also a very short time.
That's true. So. That's very well said. You're right. To me, you're right. That's like a lifetime, and literally a lifetime. And to, you know, to the span of our planet, it's a very, very small little part. Yes. And the hour that I have, or not even the hour that I have with you today, I it's a very small part, but I do want to take a little break. I'm chatting with the New Wave legend, founding member and front man of Men Without Hats, Ivan Doroschuk. We talk more with the synth pop music star when we come back. Stay tuned. Hey guys, are you loving the show? Do you want to see more of The Scene? Well, guess what? You can, because The Scene with Doreen is now a weekly segment on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash. The Daily Flash is your daily destination for trending stories, celebrity updates, and industry highlights. And it's now your home to watch The Scene with Doreen. You can turn us on and watch every Wednesday across the country. Check your local times and listings at thescenewithdoreen.com. Yes, welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I'm having a great time talking with frontman of Men Without Hats, Ivan Doroschuk, the writer and singer of the worldwide top 10 hit that you just heard, The Safety Dance. That clip I played coming out of break was Jimmy Fallon and The Roots doing their own interpretation of that song, honoring first responders for the One World Together at Home concert during COVID, and everybody's washing their hands. It's been used in TV shows like South Park, Family Guy, Scrubs, and in movies like Ma, Friends with Benefits, Biodome, Hot Tub Time Machine. It's crazy. I even saw Hugh Jackman dancing to it in a viral video. Wow. I mean, did you ever think when you were writing that about pogoing in clubs for a bouncer who wouldn't let you, did you ever think that it would just be reaching to the pop culture legend that it has?
No, probably not. But I must admit that when you're a young songwriter, you think everything you write is going to be going to be huge, and you can't understand why people aren't lining up to throw their money at you right away. So
yeah. Did you ever have one that just never, you just always thought it was going to be the one, and it just wasn't the one?
Well, there's a couple. There's one song off of Pop Goes the World that we wanted to be the second single, and the record company decided against it, and it was a slower song. It was called On Tuesday, and it had the leader of Jethro Tull, one of the band that I totally admired when I was growing up, mm-hmm. and had Ian Anderson playing flute on it. And he came in the studio and did some great tracks. And we thought that would have been a great follow-up to Pop Goes the World, but it never happened.
Now, it was the label's decision. And I've heard you speak out about that they've made several mistakes in the career of the band. And I know that you've said that a lot of times things you wanted, maybe they pushed back on, or that maybe you just didn't have the opportunity to fulfill your vision.
Yeah, well, that happens to all young bands. I mean, when you're a young artist, you get into the industry because of the love of your music is why you do it. And sometimes it's hard to understand what decisions the companies are making or to understand their reasoning. But as you grow older, you sort of, sometimes you wish you would have listened.
Oh, true. Hindsight is, what do they say, 2020, perhaps. That's very eloquent, yes. When they do a song like the Jimmy Fallon version, or the one they put it on South Park, do they have to get permission from you as a songwriter each time they use it? Like, Did they have to, did South Park have to come to you the two times that they chose to play it during their show? Or do you, can you have a veto power and say, no, I don't want it in South Park? Or no, I don't want you, Jimmy Fallon, to do this in this concert?
Yeah, I can. The artist usually has a, you know, can have a say if you want to, but it's usually up to the publishing company to decide. Mm-hmm. But in these cases, I mean, I'm more than blessed to have all these people want to use the song. It's been my favorite is still Beavis and Butthead, but
yes, you know what? You've been parodied, I guess would be the word, in a lot of cartoons. You had Family Guy and you had South Park, and then you had Beavis and Butthead. It's interesting that a lot of cartoons pick your song up.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, I consider it the highest form of praise. So
yes,
it's great.
And it's good when it's positive, like in the Beavis and Butthead when they came against Kip Winger. I remember there's like the Metallica Kip Winger kind of thing, the Winger thing that actually hurt Winger a lot. So it was good when they embrace you on the positive side as well.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all good.
Now, did you ever see something using your song that you weren't happy with?
I haven't yet. No. I've been blessed that it's all been very good from, you know, sometimes people wonder, you know, but some of the commercials or the food chain commercials that are using it, whether I'm down with that. But I think it's all good.
Well, you had Tide pick up your other tune, Pop Goes the World. I mean, Tide did a massive ad campaign around your song.
Well, even that, I used to introduce the song. I used to say this song used to be about saving the world, but now it's about keeping your clothes nice and white. So
I bet you that gets a nice response at live shows. That's great.
Yeah, it does.
I do want to say, because I alluded to it in the, you know, we came on a break, but the message of Safety Dance, it's a big middle finger to the bouncers that wouldn't allow you to do the pogoing dance in clubs. I didn't know that, honestly. And I wanted to share that with my listeners because I don't think a lot of people do realize what it means. Because I've seen so many interpretations of what you're saying and very profound, and you're meaning these huge, deeper meanings in your song. And it was really about you kind of saying, hey, bouncers, you know, middle finger up to you. I want to do pogoing in the clubs.
Yeah, no, that was it. It was the late 70s. It was the dying days of disco. And sometimes the DJ would slip in like a new wave song, like a Blondie's Heart of Glass or B-52's Rock Lobster, Devo's Satisfaction, something like that. And we'd all get up and start dancing, and we'd start pogoing, jumping up and down, bouncing off each other's chest. And pogoing was the precursor to the mosh pit and the slam dancing, but nobody had ever seen it back then. So everybody thought we were fighting. And so that was it. After getting kicked out a few times, I went home and did something about it.
Yes. And boy, did you ever. But it's weird, though, how it takes on a life of its own. And do you ever chuckle when you see the interpretations and these really like profound like reasons of what you were thinking? And you were like, I was never thinking that. It's kind of cool, but I wasn't thinking it. Does it ever make you like laugh?
Oh, sometimes I chuckle, but like, I've said this before, that the song sometimes is bigger than me, and it's bigger than the band, and it doesn't even belong to us anymore. I really feel that it belongs to everybody else, and I feel like sometimes like a traveling museum curator going around presenting this musical artifact that brings a huge amount of joy to people. So it's taken on a life of its own for sure.
It has. And just boiling it down, I don't know if it's even possible, but if you could boil it down to just one reason why you think that song resonated so strongly with people, even maybe now more than the 80s, what do you think that was the main reason? The message, the rhythm, the music? I mean, what do you feel was just what really translated to people?
Well, I think the main thing was the message. I think it's march to your own drummer. Don't be, you know, especially now, don't feel the peer pressure, especially in the time of social media. It's something I think people need to hear. They need to hear that they can dance if they want to. They can do their own thing. They don't have to do what everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. And it's also, I mean, we our fans come from across like a broad range of the spectrum. And I think that was due to the fact that, like, the video showed there was no uniform and there was no safety dance except for the S movement, which was pretty much doable by anybody who tried it. Yeah. And it was, we were, you know, one of the first really sort of inclusive musical groups. So I think that message touched a lot of people.
Yes. You know, I had William Shatner, another great Canadian, by the way, on the show a few weeks ago, and He doesn't really ever want to talk about Star Trek anymore. And he makes it known. He doesn't, you know, it's kind of the one that brung him, but he doesn't want to talk about it anymore. He's kind of over it. Does it ever piss you off that you have to talk about the same song over and over when you do have this massive, amazing body of work?
No. Like I said before, I got into this business because I'm a fan. I grew up listening to music and sneaking into shows and collecting collectibles and stuff. And when I go back now on the internet and I just check out the hundreds of thousands of bands that never got heard, that never got a chance to get their message out there, that never, you know, and I realize how much, having done it, I realize how much goes into this business, how much people put their lives and their heart and their soul and their family and their bank account and put up everything to do it. And to not being heard is a tragedy. And so I'm nothing but feel blessed that I can still do it, that I can still go out there and play for people, and I can still do it.
That's a beautiful message. And a lot of people need to listen to that message, because so many people get into this business wanting just fame or just wanting that fortune or notoriety. And it's beautiful to hear someone who's been doing it for so long, just loving the art, loving the message, loving just doing it. And that's what it's about. That's what I think people forget nowadays in the newer era. It's not a, it is a product, but it shouldn't be. It's art still.
Yeah, no, we get turned, you know, our fuel is the smile that we bring to people's faces. And like I said before, we have our original fans come and see us and they bring their families now, and everybody is just so happy. I mean, the 80s were a great fun time. There was, like you said, there was a lot of great songs. You know, I don't want to judge anybody, but I wonder how many rap songs are going to be sung around the campfire in 40 years.
Amen. Amen.
And so there was a lot of tunes. There was a lot of happy feelings, a lot of happy colors, happy messages, happy hairdos. It was fun times, and it brings people back to that. And
yes.
I think that's I'm just happy that I can be a part of it.
Don't we need more of that? We really, really do. And you're still creating music, and you mix the latest digital technology with old school analog still. And you are still creating with the synthesizer that was used during the Safety Dance recording session, aren't you?
Yeah, we do. We kept a lot of our gear, and
That's cool.
We've been, you know, making music and just sort of trying to, you know, not try to reinvent the wheel. We were just sticking to what we do best. And we have some new stuff coming out this summer, too. At the end of the summer, we'll have some new singles out there. And no, we're still having fun. So as long as it's still fun for us, we'll keep doing it.
Yes. Like you mentioned, you have an extraordinarily busy touring schedule this summer. It was stops in Canada and the U.S. You're in a lot of the cities we're syndicated in, Los Angeles, Seattle, Chicago. You're everywhere. You really are performing very regularly, which is awesome. And how do you keep it fresh? How do you keep going? What do you do mentally and physically to just keep this going fresh?
Well, I live on Vancouver Island, and one of the things I do, I go swimming in the ocean every morning, so that keeps me alert.
Awesome.
The rest is the touring is so much fun that as long as I'm enjoying it, I'm going to be out there.
Yes. You know, and you said you like to bring a smile to people's faces, and you should see me in the studio right now. My viewers can see it, but I am beaming from ear to ear because this is just such an enjoyable conversation, and so happy to hear such a positive aspect of the music industry, because there are other stories that I hear, and it's just nice to hear a nice, good story from you.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. And I do want people to go out. It's safetydance.com. It's so cute. That is your website. So check Men Without Hats. You have a very busy tour schedule and new music, like you said, coming up. And anytime you want to promote anything, please, please, please come back. You are just infectious and a joy. Really, you are a joy.
Well, thanks again. Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Thank you. You too. And best of luck to you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Stay tuned, because right after the break, we have psychic Teresa Caputo. Don't go away. Looking to get your brand to millions of people without wasting money on platforms that don't deliver your message to the right customers? Well, worry no more. Hi, I'm Doreen Taylor, and I'm so proud to announce that The Scene with Doreen is now syndicated across the good old USA. My show is one of the fastest rising new radio shows in the country, and a great way to reach a large audience and deliver your message to potential customers nationwide. People hate commercials, but now they don't have to because we create ads that are as great as your business. Become part of this incredible journey with us and let us make your business the celebrity on The Scene with Doreen. Join The Scene with Doreen family. Visit us at thescenewithdoreen.com or call us at 856-625-2375. That's 856-625-2375. You know her as the perfectly coiffed psychic medium who not only channeled spirits, but also dominated reality TV channels, starring in the hit TLC show, The Long Island Medium. On The Scene with Doreen today, I welcome New York Times bestselling author, reality TV star, podcast maven, and the Long Island Medium herself, Teresa Caputo. She has just launched her brand new reality show, sharing her gift with the world again on Teresa Caputo, Raising Spirits. Take a little listen.
The Long Island Medium is back and raising spirits in her new Lifetime series.
He wants you to know that I wasn't alone when I died, and I wasn't afraid because Mom came from my soul.
Oh, my God.
Okay, how is it different?
So we got a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, a lot of behind-the-scenes of me getting ready, what it's like really on a day-to-day basis, besides me just talking to the dead. That's the thing that I love what I do. I validate for people, or the souls of the departed validate for people, that what they sense and feel is real.
Oh, yes, what you are sensing and feeling is real, because I am feeling really excited to welcome Long Island medium and star of the new show Raising Spirits, airing on Lifetime every Thursday night, 9, 8 Central, the wonderful Teresa Caputo. Hi, Teresa, what's going on?
Hi, thank you. Nothing much. I'm just getting ready to hit the road for my tour. And today we're actually wrapping up Beyond the Readings, which will be starting on April 18th on Lifetime.
So. How do you find all the time? I know. You know what? I know how you find the time. I think I read somewhere that you're quite the coffee drinker, minimum 6 cups a day.
Here it is, Doreen. It's right here.
That was going to be my question. Do you drink coffee right now? Oh, man. I would be hearing voices too, though, but for different reasons if I were drinking that much coffee. But I do love coffee. I'm quite the endorser of a good coffee.
That's funny.
Now, you're a Gemini.
I am.
Do you believe in astrology and astrological signs and all that?
I do. I feel that a lot of it is my personality, who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think everything is 100%.
Right.
But I just find it interesting.
Yeah. Now, I've heard a lot of terms used to describe your kind of gift. Now, what term do you like to use? Is it psychic, medium, a seer? Yeah. What is the term you prefer?
I like medium.
Medium.
I don't know if that's what you want to call it. I'm just able to communicate with people that have died.
Okay.
You know, that's what I do. I don't predict things. I don't want spirit to tell people what to do with their lives. Mm-hmm. What I want spirit to do is to validate for those still here in the physical world that their loved ones are still with them, just in a different way, to believe in an afterlife, mm-hmm. and to be able to release any burdens or guilt or any negative emotions that they are carrying connected to their loved ones passing.
What a beautifully perfect way to say that. Now, you started seeing, feeling, and sensing spirits around 4. Can
Correct.
You pinpoint an event in your life that actually triggered that? Can you think back and think, well, what was it that made me feel that first time?
Well, I just thought everyone was feeling what I was feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, I just thought it was normal until we see someone standing at the foot of my bed, hear someone speak to me in a room, and there was no one else in the room but myself. Mm. And when my dad's mom passed away was a moment for me. I was 16 and I struggled because she was in the casket and she was talking to me. Mm. So that was extremely scary for me.
Right.
And that's when I completely shut down and blocked my gift.
Mm. Now, how long? It was like what you said, almost for like until your late 20s, you didn't really
yeah.
explore it again.
Right. It was right after I had my daughter. I was about 28 and I was really struggling with my anxieties, and my mom suggested that I go to attend this spiritual awareness class. Mm-hmm. You know, she thought maybe through meditation I could find some peace and mm-hmm. Solace. And what ended up happening was it created a safe space for me to explore my gift, which I didn't realize that I had at that time,
right.
that I was able to connect with everyone's loved ones. And then I struggled with my gift for another 5 years. Because I couldn't understand why someone would want to come to a medium, mm-hmm. speak to their loved ones that have died. And then 9/11 happened.
Mm.
And I had a spiritual experience where it was shown to me that Thousands of people perished that day and needed the gift of healing. They didn't know how to move on after the loss of their loved one. So I put my gift in God's hands, and here I am.
Wow.
Over 20 years later. Yeah.
Now, do spirits speak English to you? Or because I've wondered this. What do you do if you channel someone who maybe didn't speak English in the former life?
Yeah, I think it's the coolest thing because when I hear spirit, it's not like how we hear each other.
That's what I was curious about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I see shadow silhouettes, and it's more through feeling. And then spirit, they make me feel things, and then they'll show me like little quick like movie strips or like signs and symbols. But I'll just know, and it's so odd. I'll be like, did they speak another language? Because I can't understand them, but they're really not talking to me. It's the coolest thing. Mm-hmm. So then the best is a lot of times, especially at my live shows, someone might be translating. The person that I'm actually channeling to, they don't speak English as well. And then they have someone translating for them. So it really is an amazing and healing and life-changing experience, even if you don't get read.
That's well to feel it and feel that experience of someone else, because I've watched you do other interviews on like Kelly Clarkson and stuff, and where you're literally, I mean, it's hard. I saw you on The View, and I mean, they're crying, people sob, and they get something that they are so in need of, and you're providing that for them.
Yeah. Well, I always say it's their loved ones. Mm-hmm. I'm just this crazy lady from Long Island that's crazy enough to say these things. That
with amazing hair, by the way, have to say.
Thank you.
I'm jealous. We have to exchange. I have to figure out what you use. That's going to be like the thing, but I'm going to keep that to myself. I'm not giving that to my listeners.
I'm very open about what I use.
Okay, well, go for it. Give a shout out.
I use Matrix Performa Hairspray.
Awesome.
Right next to my coffee.
Oh, I'm buying it right now. Hear that, everybody? I think that is now, do I see a sponsorship? Do I see an advertising deal striking in the future?
No.
I think so.
I mean, I've been using this hairspray since the 80s, and I've been saying it for over 10 years, so I don't know. Maybe if someone's listening, they might want to do something with me.
I'm just saying. I kind of put it out there. I make things happen. See, I see things too, but I see them more in a business way.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I'm going to pin that, and maybe we'll revisit that one a little later. You know, you mentioned that loved ones come to visit their loved ones. Now, do you ever get, I mean, they're helpful and they're kind. Do you ever get one that's not so helpful and kind, or a little angry? Have you ever experienced the negativity ever, like a nasty one coming out?
Well, you know, that all depends. You know, sometimes if it's someone's personality, but they're never like rude, or it's just showing their personality. But I only want positive souls. I only want souls that walk in God's white light, souls that are going to be able to give us the gift of peace. Mm-hmm. I treat spirit like my kids. If you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Now, if it did come to you and it somehow broke through, what do you do? Yeah, what do you do to get rid of them?
You know, I'm going to say this to you, Doreen. You know, is it, you know, I can interpret it this way as well with the question that you're asking. Like, it is hard because sometimes someone could show me that they might not have been very nice to the person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they want to apologize for that.
Ah.
So they'll show me things and take responsibility for their actions, choices, decisions that might have left this person with the negative emotions. So that, if you want to interpret it that way, but I don't bring myself to any dark or negative place.
That's good. That's good. Now, have you ever ticked one off because you weren't listening the right way, or you weren't conveying the message that they really wanted? Did they ever get angry with you?
No, they'll always kid around and go, "How did you know that?"
Good, love it.
Or sometimes they'll say to me, "Why'd you say it that way? You made me sound like a sap."
Well, it is the Long Island thing. See, we translate, yes. We cut to the chase. Now, you were very busy before ever launching your first reality show.
Right.
Why? What was the thing that really just motivated you to take the leap to the small screen?
Well, I never really thought of it. A friend of mine, Courtney Mullen, who is my manager now, she unfortunately lost her dad almost 20 years ago. And she had come, and she was having a difficult time. And she had come and had a reading. And being involved in television, she said everyone should have the chance to witness and the opportunity to be healed by what you do. Mm. And she asked me, you know, do you want to do a television show? And I was like, all right. So I thought I was just going to like film a couple of episodes and go back to my life. Mm-hmm. So here I am, you know, now with a new series on Lifetime, traveling all over the country. And we even just brought the show last summer to the UK doing live shows. So I never thought in a million years I'd be where I am today.
That's wonderful. The new show on Lifetime, Raising Spirits, you're not only channeling spirits, but like you said, you're showing more of your personal day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah, so it, yeah, it's that's great. Like we're bringing you on the road to see these live shows, what I do on my days off, you know, surprising people with readings. We're also following up with people.
Oh, you're doing like revisits.
Yes. Oh. Yep. A revisit. So we're giving you a little bit. So it's, you know, a little bit more in depth, showing readings that we didn't get to show mm-hmm. that had happened. So it really is. And, you know, to revisit and to see how someone's life did actually change and how they're living their life months later because of the reading, it's you got to watch. They start on April 18th. So.
I love that. Yeah. That really, because a lot of people just, you know, on a show, they show it. It's done. They never really revisit that. I love that. Like, how does it impact your life going forward? That's wonderful.
Yeah. So I'm very excited about that.
As you should be. Now, you had anxiety in your life. You mentioned earlier in the episode.
Correct.
You have cameras that follow you around now all the time. I would think, you know, cameras capturing my every move would make me quite anxious. How do you balance that?
That's the crazy thing. It never felt weird. It never felt odd. It never felt comfortable. And that's why I say I know that this is my soul's journey. This is what I was meant to do. Because it's the craziest thing to just have cameras following you. But it's like it's almost like they're not there, mm-hmm. especially when I'm channeling and working. You know, it's just me and the client, and that's it.
That's how you know you're on the right path, that you've made that right choice. You're right. Yep. It's just affirmation after affirmation, and that's yours.
That's it.
Now, I want to talk about some things about just you, though. I read you love Broadway.
I do.
What's your favorite musical?
Oh, God.
I'm putting you on the spot now.
I can't. You can't say, like, I mean, is it Waitress? Is it, you know, I mean, Hamilton is in a category all of its own.
Right.
I just had the honor of singing Sweet Caroline with the cast a couple of weeks ago.
We had Bob Gaudio on, who's the producer of that show on Broadway now.
God, it was so great. Mm-hmm. It was so great. Neil Diamond. It was just amazing. Yes. And I love that Broadway brings that, because you learn so much about these artists that you know, you really would never know.
Yeah, Beautiful Noise.
And know about.
Yeah, on Broadway right now. That is so cool. Yeah, and we actually did a giveaway through the show. It's so cool. Now, see, another weird connection that's coming here. That's very interesting. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
I also, that I want to know, do you still sleep with a nightlight?
I sure do.
Yes. Now, what are you afraid of?
Never go away.
So what is it? Did that start early and it's kind of your thing, like a comfort thing? Or are you actually, is there a reason? Should we all be sleeping with nightlights that we don't know about? Or
no, I'm just afraid of the dark.
Oh, okay. All right. I don't blame you. There's a lot of weird things that happen and I do not blame
That's right.
Now, you're so busy doing what you're doing and with the new show coming, you know, back in April 18th with everything and touring. How can someone get a reading with you if they want one? Can they still get one with you privately?
Sure. Well, I only do readings for my podcast. Okay. I have a hotline that you can call for the hotline. I don't know the number. It's right off the top of my head.
But we can share that after.
I'll give it to you. Mm-hmm. Just go to my website at teresacaputo.com. I also just want to share with your listeners, there's a lot of fraud that goes on out there. Mm-hmm. If anyone contacts you claiming to be me asking for a gift card or for money, that is not me or anyone from my team.
Good to know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons why I formed my fan club. So people, it's really just for the fans, and the proceeds go back. I give the proceeds back to my fans. So it really is just to protect them.
Great. And it's your podcast, Hey Spirit. Is that it?
Hey Spirit.
All right. Hey Spirit. And how do I find that? How do all my listeners go to listen to it?
Oh, it's on
everywhere.
Everywhere you listen to a podcast. It's Hey Spirit.
Okay. No, well, I'm running out of time with you. God, this went fast. I really would like to talk with you more, but I think everyone needs to read more about you, learn more about you, go see you on tour. You're on tour right now. All for information can be found at teresacaputo.com. New dates are always being added. And also, I want to shout out your new series with Lifetime, Teresa Caputo, Raising Spirits, Thursday, 9, 8 central on Lifetime, available to stream the next day. And Instagram, your Teresa Caputo. Facebook, your Teresa Caputo, Long Island Medium. Woo, I think that's all. I think I got you.
That's it. You got me.
Check out her schedule and go visit her. And she's just, congratulations on everything and on the new show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to my guest today, the incredible Ivan Doroschuk from Men Without Hats and our special encore presentation of Psychic Teresa Caputo. And thank you again for tuning in to The Scene with Doreen. I'm here each week across the country bringing you the best interviews from the entertainment world and beyond. Get connected with me on social media and on our official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And make sure to tune in next week so you can find out what's going on. Bye.